love to listen to my radio. Gee, how it thrills me when I hear it go.
Good morning, kiddies.
That's when I think of you. When shadows fall at the close of the day, I turn on the switch and it starts into play. Say that you love me true. I must be emphatic. Don't think I'm erratic. That wonderful static. Don't give me a headache. Oh, I love those tones, dearest, although they make me feel blue. Ooh.
Who was that bomb?
Hi, gang. Welcome into the July effort here on MSS for me. Yep, summer's moving right along, unfortunately, but I hope you're enjoying it. We earned it. Tonight's going to be kind of fun, I hope. It's a little bit of music, but mostly comedy. It's easy to sit back and relax and have a little chuckle or two, I think, so let's do that. We're going to use a couple of our veteran showbiz people for no particular reason except for the fact I like them. And to start off, we're going to go back to 1936 for an Eddie Cantor show. And I guess one feature here that made me pick this out is the opening announcement refers back to the abdication of King Eddie back in 1936. Now, I'm sure you've all heard the abdication speech and that sort of thing. This is a precursor to that, which shows me that the Americans really were interested in the Commonwealth, the Empire, British history, etc., as it might affect them. Nice to know you took an interest way back then. Anyway, this is an example of the mature type of radio, I think. Well, at least the performers were mature in a show business sense. Both our featured people came from vaudeville, and I think if you listen to a lot of OTR, you'll know that there's a quality of those who came up from that circuit that have an extra sort of vitality to them. Not that the other fellows aren't good, but there's a different style. We'll hear that tonight as we go back to this episode. The energetic, effervescent, and very likable Eddie Cantor.
A special bulletin from the Press Radio Bureau. Friends of the royal family informed the United Press tonight that Queen Mary now feels that it is for the best interest of the empire that Edward should abdicate. She reached this conclusion, it is said, after a violent quarrel with the king yesterday, in which she pleaded with him for the sake of the empire to give up Mrs. Simpson. The king sharply refused. Persons close to the court described the meeting as a very sad one. Queen Mary was in tears, and the king, who had had little sleep recently, was pale, tired, and angry. After the interview, Queen Mary was described as showing symptoms of a nervous breakdown. One friend described her condition in these words: Queen Mary has cried herself out. Now she seems to be in a trance, hardly able to realize that all she and King George worked for, all the popularity of the royal family, which they had devoted their lives to fostering, is now tumbling down. Her distress is extreme. Another report tonight is that the Duke of York, who had recently informed King Edward that his health would not permit him to take over the throne, has made up his mind that this is practically inevitable, although he still hopes that Edward will yield to the pleading of the royal family and give up Mrs. Simpson. However, it is unlikely that anything really definite about the king's attitude will be known until tomorrow, when Prime Minister Stanley Baldwin addresses the House of Commons. Parliament has been called to meet at 2:45 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, London time, 9:45 a.m., New York time. From London, the Daily Mirror, a London newspaper, prints an editorial tonight saying that the opposition of the British dominions to the marriage of King Edward and Mrs. Simpson has been caused by what this newspaper calls the newspaper hooligans of the United States. It goes on to say that America's biggest export for the past 6 months has been venomous gossip and twisted headlines based on rumor, and that public opinion has not yet really crystallized in Britain, as the people's enlightenment has only just begun. The London Mirror also says, quote, "The Mirror favors the king's marrying Wally if he chooses. Every sensible man and woman in Britain today holds the view that anything which makes our monarch happy is good for him and good for the country. The king wants to marry Mrs. Simpson, and the people of Great Britain want his request granted, without diplomatic pressure. but it is easy to understand the nervousness of the Dominion premiers. What would our attitude be if our minds had been warped and numbed by a gangster press intent only with providing boys with sensations of bellow above the din of traffic in the streets of New York and Chicago, unquote? The London Daily Mirror for several days has been urging the cabinet that they make public all the facts concerning the king. This bulletin was from the Press Radio Bureau. Meanwhile, Columbia will continue to interrupt all scheduled programs wherever necessary in order to keep its public abreast of the latest developments in the British crisis.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is James Wallington speaking. If you'll remember, 2 weeks ago, Eddie Cantor lost his program and couldn't do it. Last week, he found it and couldn't do it. And so tonight, Eddie is planning to give you all three programs. An hour and a half of entertainment in 30 minutes. Of course, we'll have to rush a little, but please bear with us. All right, on with program number one. We're getting the 45,000 liter service of parts of gasoline and other Texaco products presented out of the mayor of Texaco Town, Eddie Cantor.
Hey! Hello, Jimmy!
Hello, Eddie.
Hello!
The mayor of Texaco Town.
Hello, Daddy.
Hello, Bobby.
Let's sing again.
Hello, Eddie Scanton.
Park your talkers.
So long, kid.
Hello, Mayor Cantor.
Hello, Deanna.
Oh!
Thanks, Deanna. That was beautiful. Special arrangement by Jack Renard. I love to spend each Sunday with you. Well, that finishes program number one.
And now, program number two.
Wait a minute, Jimmy. We did that program a little too slow. Will you speed up the next one?
Okay. Good evening. Again, the 45,000 liter service, fire, gasoline, not Texas, fire, presented out of the mayor, Texas, down at Canter.
No, hello, everybody. Hello, Jimmy. I was coming down this afternoon, taxi cabin, and I got a door. I said, what are you going to do? I'm going to spend each Sunday with you.
See, you did that one fast, Eddie.
Fast, say, Jimmy. Why, when I work, I rip into things just like this.
Well, stop,
I can.
Eddie.
What's the matter? What's
up tonight's program.
Oh, what? Tonight's program?
Yes.
Good heavens, Jimmy.
Say, Eddie, now what are we going to do now without a program?
Well,
say, I'll tell you what to do. Will you listen?
Sure, I'll listen. I'll listen to anybody.
Then listen to Fred Allen. Boy, has he got a program.
But that doesn't help me. I still haven't got a program.
Ah, here's one. Here's a program.
You big lummox, this is a theater program. Leslie Howard and Hamlet. Don't tell me you went to see that show.
Yeah, but I walked out after the first act.
Oh, you didn't understand it.
I understood it, but it says in the program, second act 12 years later. Who could wait so long?
Get out of here, will you? Get away from here. How do you like that guy, Jimmy? Bringing me a program with Leslie Howard. Wait a minute.
What?
Why can't we get Leslie Howard as a guest star tonight?
Inspiration.
With his dignity, he ought to be able to help us. Look, I'll call him up right now. Will you give me the phone, Jimmy? Give me the phone. Hello. Hello. Hello, operator. Operator, will you get me Leslie Howard on the phone right away? All right, yes. Yes, dear. I'll hold the wire.
Eddie, do you realize what you're doing? Leslie Howard is the foremost dramatic actor in the theater. You'll have to pay him a fortune.
Oh, don't be silly. A man like Howard works strictly for the sake of art. He's like me. He'd be insulted if I offered him money. Hello?
But Eddie,
quiet, Jimmy. Hello, Mr. Howard. This is Eddie Cantor. No, Cantor. No, C-A-N-T-O. Can't you hear me? Look, I'm Cantor. You know, the famous father of five girls? No, not Dion. No. No, I have five daughters, too. I'm Eddie Cantor. You know, Dion in slow motion. Oh, sure. Well, I believe in the five-year plan. Yeah. Listen, Mr. Howard, I'd like you to come on my program tonight for about 3 minutes. What? You want $10,000? Look, Mr. Howard, that's too much money. After all, I have other people to pay. I pay Wallington, then there's Bobby and Deanna, and Parker Carcass. He has to live. Why? You've got me there. What? If you like our type of program, you'll consider less? All right, I'll give you a sample of what we do in the show. Hold the wire. Renard, give me an introduction to Love Marches On. Who's the greatest heart attractor? Who's the greatest little actor? I refer to nobody but love. He's the greatest benefactor that we ever knew. Here are just a few things he can do. Love marches on and meets a lonely boy, a lonely girl, and takes them by the hand and marches on. Together, love marches on.
and then he leads them to a rendezvous and says it's up to you and marches on. Then on a certain Sunday morning, he even plays their wedding song. When they go honeymooning, he goes right along. Love marches on until he finds a nest that they request and says, I've done my best, and marches on. Yes, indeed, love marches on and meets a lonely boy, a lonely girl, and whispers love's divine, and then marches on. Forever, love marches on. He'll take the big and small, he'll take them all and make them fall in line, and marches on. Just try and keep the rain from falling, and then again control the sun. You can't stop a heart from loving, it simply can't be done. Love marches on, he'll even take a king and make a king admit that love's a thing, and marches on.
Eddie, I hope your song did the trick.
Oh, I'm pretty sure it did. Hello? Hello, Mr. Howard. Did you hear it? What? Now you want $15,000? Jimmy wants $5,000 extra after hearing me sing. All right, I'll pay you. Jimmy,
yes?
He's on his way over.
Now, listen, Eddie, now that you've got him, what is he going to do?
Oh, he'll probably do a scene from Hamlet.
But, Eddie, you could have saved all that money. You should have played Hamlet yourself.
Oh, don't be silly, Jimmy. I never did dramatics in my life.
Oh, but, Eddie, you've got the makings of a dramatic star.
Oh.
You've got the physique of a Robert Taylor.
Oh, Jimmy, you're just making an Adonis out of me.
No, Eddie, no. No, I'm serious. You've got the ability of a Charles Lawton.
Oh, Jimmy, now you're making an artist out of me.
And, Eddie?
Yes?
You've got the brains of a Jimmy Wallington.
Now you're making an ass out of me. Wait a minute. Deanna, did you want to see me, dear?
Mayor Cantor.
What is it, darling?
Is it true that Leslie Howard is going to be here tonight?
Yes, baby, he'll be here.
Oh, Mayor Cantor.
You like Leslie Howard?
Like him? I saw him 4 times in that picture of Romeo.
You mean Romeo and Juliet?
No, all I saw was Romeo.
Oh, but Deanna, I thought that you and Bobby were...
Yes, but Leslie Howard.
Town.
Who's it from?
Well, it's from Pete, my assistant at the service station.
Oh,
good
sure.
News, too. Look, he says, why, only last Monday, before 9 o'clock, 7 new customers came in for Fire Chief gasoline. And they've been coming regularly since they tried it.
Gee, Uncle Jimmy, 7 new customers in one day?
That's right.
If each of the 45,000 Texaco dealers got 7 new customers in one day, what would that be?
Let's see. 7 times 45,000 is 315,000 new customers for Texaco. And say, Bobby, if each one bought 5 gallons of Fire Chief, that would be 1,575,000 gallons.
Oh, boy, that's a lot of arithmetic.
My boy, that's a lot of gasoline. Motorists figure that Fire Chief's lightning action gives full mileage per gallon, quicker start, to save batteries in freezing weather. They like the thrilling pickup of Fire Chief's emergency power. They know a special duty gasoline like Fire Chief in the tank multiplies enjoyment at the wheel, saves money.
Uncle Jimmy, you made this like an example in arithmetic.
Yes, Bobby. If everybody would visit their Texaco dealer and fill up with Lightning Action Fire Chief, it would add to their pleasure, subtract from the cost, divide repair bills, and their motoring enjoyment will sum up to 100% in satisfaction.
Jimmy, you were right. If Leslie Howard is going to do Hamlet, our cast will have to support him. Look, I've got a copy of Hamlet here with all the parts. Get the whole gang together.
They're all here.
They're all here. I don't see them. Renard, will you step aside and let me see the cast, will you? Look at that mountain of flesh, will you? Now, let's see what parts we have. There's Hamlet and the King and Queen. I'll read Hamlet for Leslie Howard until he arrives. Jimmy, you play Horatio.
Right.
Park your carcass. What do you want to play?
I want to play post office.
No, no. No, you fool. You've got to play with Leslie Howard.
Not me. If I'm going to play post office, I want Simone Simone. Say, you know, she's a nice kid.
Nice kid. She's lovely. You know, I saw her in girls' dormitory.
Did they catch you?
Quiet. Will you stop wasting my time and let's get organized?
Well, Eddie, you still have to cast the king and queen.
Oh, that's easy. Well, Deanna will be the queen and Bobby will be the king.
I don't want to be the king if she's the queen. Leslie Howard,
Bobby.
Yes, and I've given her the best years of my life.
You did not.
And yes, and Peter Brittle, too.
You're just jealous.
Oh, quiet, children. We've got work to do.
What can Leslie Howard do that I can't do?
Get $15,000 out of me.
If Bobby won't play the king, why not give it to Renard?
Uh-huh. Now, you think I'm the type for a king?
Yeah, King Kong. Jimmy, throw him a coconut and let's rehearse, will you?
Say, Eddie.
Yeah.
Eddie, how about this part, Polonius?
Oh, that's right. Renard, how would you like Polonius?
With mustard.
Yep. With mustard. Always thinking of something to eat. You're terrible.
Yeah? Well, what has Leslie Howard got that I haven't got?
A waistline. And one chin. Come on, fellas. Will you let's get started? I'll direct. Park your carcass. You can read my part.
Okay. I lost poor Yorick. I lost poor Yorick.
Lost? You mean alas, poor Yorick, can't you? What's the matter with you? Parky, can't you read?
Say, if I could read, I would. Thank you, David.
What's that?
That is the ghost of Hamlet's father.
Eddie, I'm scared.
Who's there?
Who's there? What are you talking about?
I just heard knock-knock.
Your dumbbell, that was Renard's knees.
Eddie.
Yes?
Eddie, look. Look, it's a real ghost. A real
ghost? Where, Jimmy? Where?
There, you see? See him? He's walking toward it. Look, he's wearing a white sheet.
Jimmy, you're not frightened, are you?
No. Here he is.
Are you the ghost of Hamlet's father?
What ghost? I'm in the Turkish bath next door, and you guys are making so much noise, I can't sleep.
Oh, Jimmy, there's no use talking. This cast can never support Howard. I'll have to think of something else. Renard, will you play some music while I concentrate?
What'll I play, Eddie?
Oh, anything. Play that Italian song you played the other day. You know, la diam pam 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 tiram pam pam dai di dai pa da di dai di dai dai da da dai dai di dai. I've got a great actor like Leslie Howard coming over, but I haven't got a scene for him.
Say, wait a minute. I got a good sketch where you play the first and the second scene.
Wait a minute. I play the first and second scene.
Yeah.
When does Leslie Howard come in?
When it's time to collect the $15,000. Look, when the scene opens, you're a farmer.
Yes.
You go into the pig pen and you breathe in.
Yes.
Then you faint.
What's the name of the play?
The Farmer Takes a Whiff.
Oh, boy, that's fine writing.
Yeah, it's a smellodrama.
Yep.
Now, look.
Yes.
You go in and you talk to the pig, and both of you...
Wait a minute. Both of us? Do I look like a pig?
No, your eyes are too big.
Caucus, this is the limit. You called me a pig, and I'm going to tell Wallington, Jack Renard, I'm going to tell Leslie Howard, I'm going to tell everybody.
Sure, just like a pig, always squealing.
Yep. Me squealing? Me? You're talking to an actor who gets $30,000 per broadcast.
All right. Yes. Listen, now comes the best part.
Yes.
On the farm, there's a rooster there. He crows every morning, and he wakes up the bull.
Yes.
That makes the bull very mad.
Uh-huh.
So he has a big fight with the rooster, but the rooster wins the fight and eats up the bull.
Wait a minute. What kind of a story is that?
A cock and bull story.
Yep. Yeah, but what happened? What happens after?
Well, after that, the rooster is so happy when he ate up the bull.
Yes.
That he crows all over the place.
Yep.
And the farmer comes along and he shoots the rooster.
Yes.
And that's something you should remember with your $30,000.
Remember what?
When you're full of bull, keep your mouth shut.
Get him off. Come here, Bobby.
Yes, Daddy.
Listen, son. You know, you'll never win Deanna being jealous of Mr. Howard.
I don't care.
Bobby, what's come over you?
I just lost all faith in women.
You know, it's your own fault. You should have played the king when I asked you to. You know that, don't you? It's a good part. I would have showed you how to act in the palace.
Daddy, would you know how to act in the palace?
Would I know? Say, when the palace was two a day, I used to play there 4 or 5 weeks at a time. Ask these people out here. Of course, that's before your time.
What does Deanna think? I could play Hamlet.
Yes?
Listen. Alas, poor Yorick. I knew him well.
How do you like that? Even the kid knows him.
Get out of here, Parky.
Can Leslie Howard sing? No. Oh, Daddy, let me sing. And when Deanna comes back to me, I won't take her back. For a few minutes.
Now he's waiting out there.
Oh, he's waiting. Ladies and gentlemen, forgive my nervousness, but I'd like to present to you, anyway, one of the most nervous actors. No, that's me. I mean a great Romeo, a great Hamlet, a great Dane. No, that's a dog. I mean, here he is, that star of star, Leslie Howard. It's really him. Leslie Howard.
Well, where are we? Oh, yes, I see. Yes, yes. Thank you so much for your cordial welcome.
Mr. Howard, you know, I don't like to broach the subject, but regarding the money...
Oh, but I'll be glad to pay you now.
Pay me? Why, wait a minute. I thought I was to pay you.
Oh, no, no, no. You misunderstood me. I'm perfectly willing to pay for the privilege of having a bit of fun with you, Eddie.
You mean you want to do comedy? You, the great dramatic star of The Petrified Forest, of Human Bondage, Romeo and Juliet, and Hamlet? You... I don't understand. You want to do low comedy with me?
Yes. Isn't it terrible?
Terrible? Why, Mr. Howard.
Well, that's not all, Eddie. For the past 2 years, there's a lot of people here, but I must admit it to you. For the last 2 years, I've had a burning desire to be a fan dancer.
You mean one of those that gives out a thing like
that?
Oh, this is too much.
No. I'm serious, Eddie. I want to do jokes. I want to hear a little laughter. You know, jokes like you do with that fellow, what's his name? Rest your body.
Rest, you mean park your carcass?
Oh, yes,
rest your body. How do you know?
Yeah, that's the fellow. The fellow who called you Eddie Camelfoot.
Yep. An English Greek. Look, would you mind awfully if I called you Leslie?
No, not at all. I consider it a compliment. Toots.
Toots! Toots? Look, Leslie, wait a minute. Toots, look, this is my program. You know, I'm the comedian.
Well, of course, you're entitled to your opinion, Eddie.
Now, just a minute. Wait a minute. Are you using me for a foil?
Foil? Certainly not. I'm merely following the instructions printed on all these microphones around here. You know, CBS.
CBS? Well, that's Columbia Broadcasting's initials.
Oh, is that what it is?
Sure.
Oh, I thought it meant Cantor becomes stooge.
Now, see, I bet you don't get a laugh like that in Hamlet. Seriously, you know, before you get too comical, why don't you just give us something from Hamlet? I'm sure the audience would love it. Will you really?
Well, Eddie, I don't know.
A little bit.
Think,
just a sample.
A little bit?
Yes.
A few words?
Yes.
Well, alas, poor Yorick. I knew him well.
For heaven's sake, you know him too?
Yep.
That?
Rest your body. Rest your body.
Well, I'm glad he's gone. Eddie?
Yep.
Eddie, don't make me do anything from Hamlet. This isn't the place. I came here to have a little fun. Let me tell some jokes with you.
All right, Leslie. I'm willing. Look, how about a riddle?
That suits me fine.
Right. Here we go. There are two of them, and you wear them on a rainy day. What is it?
Two of them, and you wear... I give up, Eddie.
All
I
right.
Give up.
A pair of rubbers.
It's quite funny, Eddie.
Yeah. Now I'll try again. Leslie, look. There are four of them and two people wear them on a rainy day. What is it?
Four of them.
Yeah, now think
two
hard.
Two people wear them on two rainy days.
That's
one
right.
Day.
Yes. Yeah. Four of them and two. That's right.
I'm tired, Eddie. I give up. What is it?
Two pairs of rubbers.
That's funnier than the other one.
Yeah.
It's... Quite as funny.
Yeah.
I got the idea. Eddie, you won't get me again. Let's try it once more.
All right, now here's a tough one.
Yes.
Here's a tough one.
I'm already, Eddie.
Now, it isn't your father.
No.
It isn't your mother. It isn't your sister. And it isn't your brother. What's the answer?
No, come. Oh, I couldn't do that one.
No.
It's just too easy.
No, come on, tell me. What's the answer? It isn't your father. It isn't your mother. It isn't your sister. What's the answer? Come on, now. Come on now, don't laugh. Give me the answer.
Three pairs of rubbers.
Well, now you've got the idea.
Of course I've got the idea. This business of being a comedian is very, very simple.
It is, huh?
Oh, yes.
Well, Leslie, I'll let you in on a little secret. You know, I could walk into your racket just like that.
Which racket?
Shakespeare.
Oh, that one.
Oh, yes, yes.
I should like to hear you, Eddie.
You mean you'd like me to take a crack at something legitimate? Would you like to hear me a little?
Yowza.
Yowza? Yowza?
Yowza, I said.
All right, Leslie, old boy, I shall never forget my big speech in Julius Caesar. Wherefore rejoice? What conquest brings he home? What tributaries follow him to Rome and grace and captive bond his chariot wheels to embrace?
Eddie, you proved it to my complete satisfaction.
Thank you, Leslie. Thank you.
Not at all, Eddie. You're a great gasoline salesman.
Oh, get away. Oh, yeah? Well, there's still one thing I can do that you can never do.
What's that?
Renard, music. If you knew Susie like I know Susie, oh, 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 what a girl. There's none so classy as this fair lassie. Oh, 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 my goodness, what a chassis. I had a mustache as cute as a pup. Susie kissed me, and she burned the damn thing up. If you knew Susie like I know Susie, oh, oh, what a girl.
Thank you, Eddie. Is that all?
That's all there is to
That's
it.
That's all there is to
it's
it.
It's easy, like yeah. Three pairs of rubbers, yeah.
Renard, music. If you knew Susan.
Yes.
Like I know Susan.
Yes.
Oh.
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 Oh,
oh.
What a girl. How am I doing, Eddie?
You're hot.
Thank you. There's none so classy, fatty. Is this fair lassie? Oh. Oh, my goodness, what a chassis. I had a moustache as cute as a pup.
Yes.
Susan kissed me.
And what happened?
Susan burned the darn thing up.
Swing it.
If you knew Susan like I know Susan. Oh. Oh, what a girl. Alas.
Oh, what a girl! Leslie, I want to thank you for coming here tonight. Really, it's been a thrill. I'm not only speaking for myself, but I'm sure I'm expressing the sentiments of our entire radio audience.
And Eddie... Eddie, I want to thank you, too. It's been a unique experience and one that I'll not soon forget. It's been a pleasure to appear with you. I've learned a great deal, and I want you to know that there's one thing I shall always carry in my memory.
And what is that, Leslie?
Three pairs of rubbers.
Sunday with you, as friend to friend. I'm sorry it's true, I'm telling you just how I feel. I hope.
We interrupt the program of Eddie Cantor. This program is interrupted to bring you a special bulletin from the Press Radio Bureau. It is again reported in London tonight that King Edward is considering the advisability of broadcasting a message to his 400 million subjects throughout the world. But no arrangements have been made for such a broadcast so far as is known at this time. This bulletin is from the Press Radio Bureau. Further details will be found in your newspaper. Meanwhile, Columbia will continue to interrupt all scheduled programs wherever necessary in order to keep its audience abreast of the latest development in the British crisis. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. WABC, New York.
Well, there's a chap I hope to meet in a future life. Seemed like a very nice fellow. He got people's careers started, did a lot of work for the war, and probably wore himself out because he died in his 70s and the old heart just got too old. He had conquered all phases of show business, movies, radio, TV, and records. The next feature kind of applies the same way to the Marx Brothers. They didn't do well on radio, but conquered the other ones. They were really visual, movies and such. And some work in radio. Groucho was probably the best of the batch in that respect. But even he was floundering as far as that medium was concerned. In 1947, they made another attempt. He was really talked into going into radio. He'd had enough of it. It wasn't working for him. It was too limited. Couldn't work within a 30-minute time frame. He couldn't work without really getting the audience approval and working with the audience as he went along. But John Goodell kind of talked him into this one more time. And probably it was the part of his career that became best known to us latecomers. You Bet Your Life premiered in 1947 on radio and joined TV in 50. I think that was part of Goodell's idea, was to have him be one of those markers for early television. They made allowances. As the head for Bob Hope with Bob's radio programs, he was another one of these people who couldn't be confined, so they had to do a lot of editing to make it fit. Same thing worked for Groucho, although in his case they probably had to edit stuff that just maybe wasn't great for the radio audience. But it came to radio and then to TV, as I said, and that's where I first ran across him. As a wee little bairn, even though the program ran, I think, from 50 to 52 or thereabouts, I must have seen it when I was about 3 or 4 years old for the first time, and so that'd be 1954-ish, so in reruns, in kinescope, I imagine, on my grandparents' television. It was a rarity in our circle to have TV. And my granddad had a Stromberg Carlson, probably a 12-inch round-screen console television. And it would attract any youngster's attention. It attracted mine. I wouldn't understand what was going on, but you could get the sense that Groucho was funny. So I tended to follow him a little bit. Through teenagehood, he became more popular with the university crowd. Again, back to the reruns of You Bet Your Life. And so they stayed with me in the coming and momentarily to us. Now, I think this is one of his better shows. It's got a lot of spontaneity to it, and it just shows Groucho as his Groucho self. It was just fun stuff. Let's have a listen.
Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word tonight is bread. B-R-E-A-D.
Really?
You bet your life! The DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America present Groucho Marx in You'll Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
Groucho!
Hey, that's me, Groucho Marx, the Queen of the May. Thank you. Well, here I am again with $1,500 for one of our couples. George Fenneman, who's first?
We invited some girl gas station attendants and some hot rod drivers to the program. And just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Miss Dorothy Donata and Don Steadman. And here they are. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, kids, for the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers. And if you say the secret word, you'll split $100 in cash between you. It's a common word, something you see every day. A hot rod driver and a girl service attendant, eh? Dorothy Donata? I presume you're the girl service attendant?
Yes, I am, sir.
I thought so. You're wearing pumps, that's why. Where are you from, Dorothy?
Oh, I'm from the beer and pretzel capital of the world, Reading, Pennsylvania.
Oh. There's a drunk in the first row. Huh? And, Don, Steadman, you're the hot rod driver. Where are you from? Hot Springs?
No, sir. I'm from the Sooner State, Oklahoma.
You both look like fairly new models. Don, how old are you?
22.
22. And what's your age, Dorothy?
22.
Well, you still got the original paint job, huh? Are you married, Dorothy?
No, I'm not.
Why not?
Oh, I still have time yet.
So have I. Shall we dance? Why aren't you married, Don?
Well, I still got a little ways to go.
Well, if you're driving a hot rod, it won't be long before you'll get there. How do you go about building one of your highway rockets?
Well, you rebuild the front end, put in new kingpins and new shocks all the way around, and then you have to change the gears in your differential. You've got to get your manifold. Some of them are running four pots this year.
No, what?
Some of them are running four pots now.
Well, I've been half-potted, but I didn't know that. What is a pot, anyhow?
It's a carburetor.
Why don't you call it a carburetor?
Well, that's just like building a stock car.
I see. You're too snobbish to call it. Well, what else? What else do they do?
Well, there was one fellow that put two front ends, one on the front, one on the back.
Well, what is the object of that? That sounds...
Well, you'll have to admit it's different.
You seem to be more interested in freaks than you are in locomotion. Dorothy, how about some service? You've been standing there all this time, and you haven't even wiped my windshield. Tell me, what do you think of hot rodders?
Oh, I think they're swifty.
You think they're what?
Swifty.
Did you know you were swifty?
Sure, I knew it.
Now, where do you attend your gas pumps, Dorothy?
The Gilmore Serve Yourself Service Station, Beverly Boulevard.
I see. Thought that's what you were there for. What do you mean, serve yourself?
You just serve yourself. You come in and serve your own gas and wipe your own windshield and check your own oil, and then you pay me.
If I'm going to do all that, I'll put the money in my own pocket and leave. Huh? You call that a service station?
Mm-hmm.
Suppose a woman drives into your station. You make her do all that work?
I treat the men and women alike.
Well, if you ever expect to get married, you're going to have to revise that policy. Not much, Dorothy, but some, huh? What do you girls call yourselves? I'm sure you don't refer to each other as girl gas station attendants, do you?
No, we call each other gas jockeys.
There's a whole new language sprung up. I'm completely out of touch with the outside world. Do you save hot rod drivers?
Oh, we certainly do.
Well, will you save me one the next time I come in there? How much gas does the average hot rod driver buy?
Well, it all depends how much money they have in their pockets. We had one come in today that bought 3 cents worth.
Well, can he get out of the station with 3 cents worth? What do you do, drop it in his ear? Don, how far can you get on 3 cents worth of gas?
Well, I've never been that cheap.
Let's assume that you were broke, not necessarily cheap. Let's say you were broke and only had 3 cents. How far would you go in your car?
Well, I bought 5 cents worth and I got...
But you wouldn't be so cheap to buy 3 cents. What about 4 cents worth? Nothing under a nickel, huh? Okay, how far do you get on a nickel's worth of gas?
Well, I almost got home.
You mean all the way to Oklahoma? Now, how fast can one of your hot rods travel, Don?
Well, if you push it, it should go between...
No, I mean if you're inside the car. This is where the nickel's worth of gas, I guess.
No, when I mean push it, I mean you got your foot in the carburetor.
Everything you say has another meaning. How fast did you say you could go?
Well, most of them are... I won't say if they push it. Most of them...
You can say it again if you want. I'm inured to everything now.
If you push it, they go from between 120 to 160.
Mm-hmm. Well, where do you drive 150 miles an hour? And where are you going? And what's your hurry?
Well, we're racing against the clock at Lake El Mirage.
Does the clock run alongside of you?
No, I mean, we're racing against time.
Oh, time. Well, he's kind of cute at that, isn't he? Dorothy, do you like him?
Sure I do. Very much.
Well, I like him too, Dorothy. Don, you'll have to choose between us. I'm not going to do very well, I can tell you. Dorothy, I think you'd be perfectly safe going on a ride with Don here. After all, at 150 miles an hour, he has to keep both hands on the steering wheel. Isn't that right, Don?
No, not necessarily.
Well, if the girl you take out isn't an angel, she will be by the time you get back. When you see me crossing the street, all I ask is just stop and wait for about 20 minutes, huh? Until I'm safely on the other side. How carefully do you drive, Don?
Well, most of the guys that drive roadsters are, 90% of them are very careful. They take pride in their cars and they drive them safe, and mechanically they are A1. We are now trying to get them off the streets from racing by driving it, having the races up at El Mirage, and they're racing against time only, and the cars are in perfect condition, and that's about it.
Well, my advice for you is to take your car into your nearest DeSoto Plymouth dealer. As a matter of fact, I think during the last war, it was proven that many of the best airplane pilots were kids who had been driving hot rods. Well, only let me know when you're coming down my street, will you? Now that we've discussed the hot rod situation, let's see how well you two make out in the quiz. Now, in just 1 minute, you're going to play your Bet Your Life for a chance at the $1,500 question.
The best in service at a fair price. That's what the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America offer you when you take your car to any of them for service, no matter what make of car you drive. These DeSoto Plymouth dealers believe in giving every customer a fair deal. This fair deal consists of expert mechanics working with the best tools and equipment to give you an efficient job every time. Also, a desire on the part of every dealer to treat you courteously and to charge you a fair price. It's easy to see. A DeSoto Plymouth dealer wants you for a steady and satisfied customer. So next time your car needs attention, won't you stop in at the sign of an authorized DeSoto Plymouth dealer? And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth.
Now, let's see if you two will get a chance at the $1,500. Fenneman, tell them the rules.
Each of our three couples has $20. They bet as much of that 20 as they want on each of four questions. The couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $1,500 question at the end of the show. Our other two couples are in a waiting room offstage, so they don't know what's happening out here.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected songs by Rodgers and Hart as your category, right? Here's your first question. How much of the 20 will you try?
10.
Now, what is the title of this song? Play, Jerry. What is it?
Blue Moon.
Blue Moon is right.
And they're on their way with $30.
And how much of the 30 will you bet?
$15.
$15. What is the title of this one?
only have $45.
All right, you got $45. Here's your third question. How much of the 45?
$40.
$40. Give me the title of this one. Okay, Jerry.
This can't be love.
This can't be love.
They're ruining Climbing Dolly at $85.
All right, you're right back in that hot rod now. Is your last chance to beat the other couples? How much are the 85?
$70.
$70.
$70. Let's see if you can identify this song.
And then my heart stood still.
My heart stood still is right.
And they wind up with a grand total of $155.
Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. Stick around now. You may get the chance at the big question.
Groucho, the secret word is still bread.
I know that, George.
Well, perhaps the next couple will say it.
I know that, too.
We invited some tax assessors to the show and
I didn't know that.
Oh. And just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected one of them, Mrs. Helen Carr. Her partner, Mr. Bill Redding, is a married man from the audience. And here they come. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome to Your Bet Your Life. And if you say the secret word, you'll split $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you see every day. A tax assessor, eh? That's you, Mr. Redding?
No, I'm a hotel clerk.
I thought you said you were a tax assessor.
No, you just said that.
Oh, is that where I heard it, huh? Then you're a tax assessor, Mrs. Helen Carr?
Yes, I am.
How long have you two been married?
I'm not married to him, no.
Well, don't come running to me with your trouble. Aren't you ashamed, Mr. Redding, breaking up a happy home like hers?
No, I just met her a few minutes ago.
Past Weicker, eh? Where are you from, you rascal, you? Mr. Redding, where are you from?
Well, I'm from College View or Peanut Hill, Nebraska. That's a suburb just outside of Lincoln.
I didn't know Lincoln had any suburbs. Where are you from, Mrs. Carr?
Originally Boone, Iowa.
Boone, is that named after Daniel Boone? Boone
yes, it is.
Named after Daniel Boone. Yeah. Do you know what he was famous for?
Well, no, I don't. He had a coonskin cap.
There's a man spent his whole life as a hero, and he wound up being identified as a fellow who wore a coonskin cap. Huh? When I die, I'll be known as an old mustache, I suppose. How long have you been married, Mr. Redding?
Oh, about 31 or 32 years.
Mm-hmm. How did you meet this poor misled wife of yours?
Well, at the time I was a night clerk, and I had an Excelsior motorcycle. This particular morning, while I was rushing home, and just as I scooted around the corner, why, she was stooping over to set down a pail of garbage.
It's a very romantic meeting. So.
I landed up mixed up with the garbage and with an injured knee. And it took me about 2 weeks before I was able to ride the motorcycle again. And during that intermission, why, she used to come around and sit on the front porch.
That's known as a Freudian slip. I used to know a girl who wore one of those. Huh? Now, Mrs. Carr, isn't it unusual for a woman to be a tax assessor?
Oh, no. 6 out of 7 of us are women.
What is the other one, a giraffe? Now, as a tax deputy, what are your duties?
I go around the county door to door taking statements for personal property.
Just what is personal property? Huh?
Personal property is anything you own or use.
That's the broadest statement I ever heard. You mean I have to pay a tax on my neighbor's shower? Well, I use it all the time. Now, Mrs. Carr, pretend I'm a housewife and you're making a routine call. Now, go ahead and ask me the usual questions.
Good morning. I want to take your statement. Do you have any real estate?
I have a 50-foot lot. Continue.
How deep is it?
It's about 30 feet deep. That's only at high tide. Go on.
personal property?
Furniture? Yeah, all the furniture in my living room is new. We got it by sending in soap coupons.
Well, what do you have in the other rooms?
I have 3 million bars of soap. Huh? Well, I came clean that time. Well, now that I know all about tax assessments, let's see how well you two are going to make out with You Bet Your Life. Now, you run your $20 into more than the other couples, and you get a chance at the $1,500 DeSoto Plymouth question. I can't tell you how much our first couple won, but Fenneman is offstage to remind our listeners.
The hot rod driver and the girl gas attendant earned $155.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected pictures on paper money as your category. Is that right?
That's correct.
Here's your first question. How much of the 20 would you try?
$10.
$10. Whose picture's on the $5 bill?
That's Abraham Lincoln.
Lincoln. You knew that from Lincoln the Bastard.
You're off to a good start with $30.
Well, you got $30. Remember, you're going for $1,500 tonight. Now, how much of the 30 will you bet?
We'll bet the whole 30.
The whole 30. Whose picture is on the $20 bill?
That's Andrew Jackson.
Andrew Jackson is right.
Now they have $60.
Well, you're really gamblers. Now you got $60. Here's your third question. How much of the 60?
You bet the 60.
You're going to bet the 60. Whose picture is on the $10 bill?
That's Alexander Hamilton.
Alexander Hamilton.
They're really climbing now, Groucho. They have $120.
Got $120? How much of the $120 are you going to pay? You're going to bet.
$120.
You're going to bet the whole works, huh? Whose picture is on the $1 bill?
George Washington.
George Washington.
And they wind up with a grand total of $240.
Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. Now, we'll soon know who gets the chance at the $1,500 question.
You know, friends, when you're out driving on a long automobile trip, keep in mind that there are more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast.
Fenneman, don't you know when a person's driving a car, he's supposed to keep his mind on the road?
Well then, folks, when you're at home, thinking about that trip in your car, remember there's a DeSoto Plymouth dealer near you.
I can practically feel his hot breath on my spare tire.
That's just the warmer weather ahead, Groucho, and it's just one more reason why you should drive in to a DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
Touché, Fenneman. Now let's get back to You Bet Your Life. Who's ahead?
Well, the tax assessor and the married man are leading with $240, and the secret word is still bread. We invited some game wardens and some commercial fishermen to the program tonight, and just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Warden Walter Shannon and fisherman Vince Devlahovich. And here they are. Gentlemen, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, boys, to the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. And if you say the secret word, you'll divide $100 in cash between you. It's a common word, something you see every day. A commercial fisherman and a game warden, eh? What is your name?
Devlahovich.
Devlahovich, huh? What is that, Russian?
No, that's Yugoslavonian.
Yugoslavonian, huh? Are you from Yugoslavia?
I was born here, San Pedro.
Are you a skipper or a member of the crew?
I'm a skipper.
A skipper, huh? Could you skip around for me here? Did you ever wear a Schiaparelli gown or a hat or anything? You think they'd pay to come in, wouldn't you? You're the game warden, Mr. Shannon?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me, warden. This sounds like old times. Can we call you? Warden, what are your principal duties?
Our principal duties are to watch people who are hunting and fishing.
Oh, a television fan, eh? Or as we say in the business, TV. That means terrible vaudeville, huh? Ah, there are still diehards that listen to radio. Why do you watch people fishing and hunting? Haven't you got anything better to do, Mr. Shannon?
To see if they violate the fish and game laws.
Well, can't they violate it without you watching them? What kind of laws do they violate?
They catch and hunt out of season, catch fish out of season, sometimes shoot females.
What kind of females, huh?
Such as does, deer.
Does females, you mean? What do you mean by does females?
And the deer, does females.
What about them females? Huh? Or dumb females, that's even more accurate, huh? Now, Warden, what gives you the most trouble on your job?
As a rule, people hunting and fishing out of season.
Uh-huh. Now, when is the deer season?
In the southern part of the state here, it runs from about August 7th to October 15th.
Well, how can the deer tell when it's open season?
Well, I suppose by the bullets whizzing by.
I guess that's true, huh? And they know for sure when they see the hunters dropping like flies, too. Now, mackerel bait, around here, where is the best place to catch sardines?
In the ocean.
No, what I meant was, in what part of the ocean do you catch sardines?
Well, offshore of San Diego up to Santa Barbara City.
What kind of fish do you catch?
Mostly sardines and tuna.
Now, how much do you get for your tuna?
Well, yeah, the yellowfin tuna, you get $310 a ton. When we get a load of tuna, which is 90 ton, we split the money. The crew gets 65% of the share, and the boat gets 35%.
The boat walks up and asks for it? Anything unusual ever happen to you when you're off on one of these fishing trips?
Well, yes. A couple of months ago, we were pinched by the game warden in, for...
Well, where did he pinch you?
Well, we were supposed to be fishing in Santa Monica Bay, but...
What happened?
Well, we paid a fine. Each crew member paid a $25 fine.
And the boat pays part of it, too?
Yes.
The boat walks right down to the police station. That's a very intelligent boat, you know. That? I don't know what you need a crew for at all. Well, I know all about fishing and hunting. Now, let's see how well you two make out in the battle for the $1,500 question. You beat the other two couples, and you win the chance at all that money. I can't tell you how much our first couples won, but Fenneman's going to remind our listeners.
The tax assessor and the married man are ahead with $240.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected national parks as your category. Is that right? All right. Now talk right up into the microphone. How much of the $20 are you going to try?
$10.
$10. And what state is Hot Springs National Park?
Arkansas.
Arkansas is right.
All right, Roger, with $30.
All right, Remy, going for $1,500 tonight. How much of the 30 will you try?
25.
25. In what state is the Everglades National Park?
Florida.
Florida is correct.
Now they have $55.
$55. Here's your third question. How much of the 55?
50.
50. In what state is Zion National Park?
Utah.
Utah is right.
Now they have $105.
Now you got $105. Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the 105?
100. It's okay with me.
100.
Okay. In what state is Mammoth Caves National Park?
Kentucky.
Kentucky is right.
And they wind up with a grand total of $205. And that means the tax assessor and the married man with $240 get the chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $1,500 question.
Is your car ready for the warmer weather? If not, why not stop in now at a DeSoto Plymouth dealer's? To put your car in tip-top condition, your DeSoto Plymouth dealer will give it an engine tune-up. This should be done to prepare your car for the warmer weather ahead.
So be sure to stop in at the sign of an authorized DeSoto Plymouth dealer first chance you get. No matter which of the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers you visit for that check tune-up, you can be sure of getting efficient, courteous service at a fair price wherever you see the sign of an authorized DeSoto Plymouth dealer. And here is the tax assessor and the married man, the winning couple, all ready for the DeSoto Plymouth $1,500 question, Groucho.
Here we go for $1,500. You ready?
Yes, sir.
I'll give you 15 seconds to decide on a single answer between you, so think carefully and please, no help from the audience. Here it is. The Pony Express took 9 days to travel from St. Joseph, Missouri to the Western Terminal. For $1,500, what was the western end of the Pony Express run? What is the answer you two have decided upon?
Salt Lake.
I'm sorry. It's Sacramento, California. So that means the big question next week will be worth $2,000. Well, you lost the big money, but you won $240 in the quiz. Congratulations and thanks to both of you.
You Bet Your Life is a John Goodell production, transcribed from Hollywood, directed by Robert Dwan and Bernie Smith. Music by Jerry Fielding. Be sure to tune in again next Wednesday night at this time for the Groucho Marx Show, You Bet Your Life, presented with the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers of America. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth, two great cars, both products of the Chrysler Corporation. And don't forget, next week, the big question will be worth $2,000.
Well, Bing Crosby's champing at the bit, so good night, folks, and remember, just be sure to see your DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
Folks, here's a tip from the National Safety Council. Two of the most important rules of the road are courtesy and common sense. This is George Fenneman, signing off for the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast.
Okay, so time to finish off tonight and up to 1975. And here's a couple of radio people that didn't have that vaudeville experience. Their style was much different. I'm not saying this because they didn't come through the stage aspect of things, but you do know a difference. Yep, time for the Baxters, another one of their little adventures. I think the last time we talked about them, they were stuck in a motel overnight. Well, they're stuck outside again this time, but a little different circumstance. Any of us who have had pets or had to babysit a pet can probably identify with this, and especially if you had kids who had pets. Well, you'll hear what I mean. Here we go.
It's not nice to eavesdrop, but it's fun. So let's check in on the comedy of errors at the Baxter. On the little things in life. Brought to you by Daytrill, the new non-aspirin pain reliever from Bristol-Myers.
Every woman likes to know she's the best she can be, so take a little time out for yourself, your looks, and especially for great-looking hair. Great-looking hair comes easily with Natural Wear Miss Clairol Hair Color. Choose from two personal formulas. Shampoo formula, our conditioning formula, is the easy way to get fresh, young color. Extra-rich cream formula is the one hairdressers use, because no laboratory today has found a better way to cover gray. Shampoo formula or cream formula, try Natural Wear Miss Clairol to know you're the best you can be.
I'm a homemaker, and I work part-time, too, so I get my share of headaches. But I don't take aspirin. It can irritate my stomach. So I've used Tylenol. It's easier on my stomach. But then I learned about new Datril. I compared labels. Datril has no aspirin either. Both have the same pain reliever, same effectiveness. But compare prices. Datril can cost less. So shop for the best prices and save money.
Datril, new from Bristol-Myers.
It's 11 o'clock. Where have you been? I got undressed, got into bed, read for a while, then realized you weren't anywhere in the house.
I went over to Mrs. Waldron's to see about her canary.
Again? You have spent more time running back and forth looking after that scraggly bird than ever...
I think it's dead.
What?
I am so upset, it just makes me sick. I don't know what I could have done wrong. I always go over there in the morning to talk to it, and then in the afternoon, and then the evening to put the cover over the cage. I am just sick of it, honey, whatever's happened,
you can't blame yourself.
Well, I do. You see, I missed going over there this afternoon. I had bridge club, and I just didn't go. Now, the canary was all right this morning. I changed the paper, fresh water, fed it, you know, talked to it. Left the radio on low so it would have music. I mean, I have followed Mrs. Waldron's instructions. Well, I'm just so upset. I think he's dead.
Well, what do you mean, you think he's dead?
He looks it. He's lying on his little back with his little feet up in the air like this.
Oh.
Would you come over with me and look at him?
Now?
Yes.
Well, I'm all undressed. I'm in bed.
Well, can't you throw a bathrobe on and drive over with me? It's only 5 blocks.
Oh, come on. Look, honey,
I cannot go to sleep until I know for sure. Maybe he's just sick. Maybe I should call the vet and rush the canary over there
or something. Did he move at all?
I don't think so. I talked to him, but... You know, talking to a canary even when he's sitting on his perch. You know, you don't really get anywhere. It's not like a cat or a dog. I can't tell whether a canary's listening to me or not.
If he's lying on his back with his feet up in the air, I'd say the chances are 1,000,000 to 1 that he's dead.
Will you please drive over there with me and look at him?
Well, I don't know anything about canaries, dead or alive.
I'd like to have some opinion besides mine. Please, will you come with me?
Well, why didn't you just pick up the cage and bring him back here with you?
I don't know. I was just too upset. Alone in that big house and the canary upside down. I just... Please!
All right.
Come on.
If Mrs. Waldron is so crazy about that canary, she ought to stay home and look after him herself.
Here's your bathrobe.
You're too soft-hearted. People are always asking you to look after their pets. If just once you would say no...
Come on, never mind all that. I feel so awful and I'm... So... And that's the way he looked when I got here. He certainly hasn't moved.
Turn on that other lamp. He sure looks dead to me.
Well, what am I going to tell Mrs. Waldron? I'll have to phone her. She's visiting her daughter in Arizona. Oh, she just adored her little bluebird.
Bluebird? This is a canary.
I know. She said he was her little bluebird of happiness or something. I don't know. She called him Boobird.
Uh-huh. Well, all right, let's take him out of the cage. Where does it open?
Right here.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
poor little thing. I was here this morning. I just missed this one afternoon.
Now stop fussing so. Whatever happened is not your fault.
I've looked after him before, so he knew me, and I even told him this morning. I said I might not be back until evening because I had bridge club this afternoon.
The canary did not die because you missed seeing him this afternoon.
Oh, I hope not. You sure he's dead? You can't feel any heartbeat or anything?
How do you feel a canary's heartbeat?
I looked to see if he was breathing, if his little chest was going up and down, but I couldn't tell.
Honey, the bird is dead. He's cold.
Oh, I just don't know what to do.
There isn't anything you can do.
You don't know how crazy Mrs. Waldron was about him. She said I was the only person she would have left him with. She trusted me.
Let's get back to our house and get to bed. Give me a piece of that newspaper over there. We'll wrap the bird up and we'll...
And what?
Well, dispose of the remains.
Where?
I'll take care of it. You stop worrying.
You're not going to just throw him out in the... garbage or something. What were you planning?
Well, I hadn't planned anything except getting to bed at a decent hour tonight, and here I am in my pajamas 5 blocks from home.
I will have to phone Mrs. Waldron and find out what kind of arrangement she wants to make.
Arrangements?
Sue Birdie was her pet, dear. I better phone her right now and get it over with. Oh, how I hate to tell her.
Will you please call her? I'd like to get home and get some sleep tonight. Will you call her now?
Yes.
Pick up the phone.
Yes. Oh, goodness. I'm just so upset, I just don't know how to tell her. I mean, I really have looked after that operator. I want to make a long-distance call to Arizona. Yes, and I'm just so sorry. Well, when your mother gets in tonight, Mrs. Lansing, you tell her that I called. Well, certainly we will. By the lilac bush. Well, we'll take care of it, and if your mother wants to phone, I'll explain everything to her. All right. Goodbye. Really?
What's the matter? You sound kind of put out.
Put out is hardly the word. Mrs. Waldron's over at some nephew's house. That was her daughter I talked to, and she was so nasty. I mean, really unpleasant. As though it were all my fault the canary died.
Never fails. That's the thanks you get for being nice.
She said, well, I certainly hope that you'll see that Mother's boo birdie gets a nice, decent funeral. And I said...
Funeral?
Well, yes. I didn't like Mrs. Waldron so much, I think I'd have hung up on her daughter. Well, for Mrs. Waldron's sake, we'd better get at it, I guess.
Get at what?
The funeral. Now, look for a spade in her garage out there.
Come on.
Find a spade, will you, and dig a hole by the lilac bush. It's right in front there by the front door. I'll go home and find a little box of some kind.
But it's nearly midnight.
I know, so let's hurry. I don't want to come back over here tomorrow and go through this all by myself. Now, dig a hole by the lilac bush. I'll be right back.
Dentist in years.
Mom, you're doing fine.
Shuffle kick.
5 minutes, class.
Let's sit down. We're meeting your father for dinner. How do I look?
You always look pretty.
Thanks, sweetheart.
Especially your hair. Mom, the class is starting.
Oh.
Even when you can't hold up any longer, your hair can with FinalNet. FinalNet is not an aerosol. There's no wasteful propellant. It's concentrated to hold your hair all day. FinalNet holds up longer than you do.
Do you think all antiperspirants are basically the same? Well, ban roll-on antiperspirant may just change your mind. Take effectiveness, for instance. Tests have shown that ban roll-on antiperspirant will actually help stop wetness better than most leading sprays. Make your own test soon. Pick up a bottle of ban roll-on, and you may discover what we've shown in tests. Ban roll-on antiperspirant. Proof that not all antiperspirants are created equal.
Come on, hurry up. I've seen a police car go past here twice. I do not want some cop asking me what I'm doing in Mrs. Waldron's front yard at midnight in my pajamas.
Oh.
I do not want to tell him we're holding services for a canary. I just do not honestly think he'd believe it.
Just a minute now. I found this little piece of red velvet to put in a cigar box. Doesn't the little yellow bird look lovely against the red velvet?
What cigar box is that?
Oh.
You didn't just dump my new cigars out of the box, did you?
It was the first thing I saw.
The cigars will get all dried out.
What's more important, your cigars or a poor little canary?
Well, frankly, my cigars.
Really?
Oh, well, come on.
There, all right, there. There it is. Cover it up with the dirt. Do you think we ought to, say anything?
What I could say right now, I don't think would be suitable for the occasion.
Couldn't you try to be a little nicer? Remember when we had to bury Brownie, how terrible we felt? We loved him so.
Oh, yeah. I guess so. Well, here we are. Sleep tight, little bird. Sleep tight.
Well, I do have to tell Mrs. Waldron that you had, a really nice funeral and describe it to her. Why don't we say the 23rd Psalm? Please, will you quit looking around for the police car? No. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the sea. For goodness sakes, why don't you go to sleep?
I can't sleep now, I'm so wide awake. It doesn't bother you at all, does it, that we had to explain to that cop what we were doing? I knew he'd show up. I just knew it. I'd seen him go past twice.
Well, honey, he was very nice after I explained. His wife has parakeets.
Will you do me a favor, please? The next time some friend or neighbor asks you to look after a dog or a cat or whatever...
Look, the Fraleys have looked after our pets when we've been away.
I know, but every time we've had someone's pets, something has happened. The Gordon's rabbit got sick. We sat up all night with a McAllister's cat.
Oh, honey, you pretend to be so hard-hearted. Why, you brought the Wilson's dog to bed with us. you remember that?
Yeah, he was so homesick.
Oh,
I know. Nothing else.
Little puppy, too. Well, it's nearly 1 o'clock. You better try and sleep anyhow, dear.
Yeah. Okay, good night, honey.
Good night, darling. I'll get the light. Oh, that must be Mrs. Waldron calling. I'll get it.
At this hour?
Well, Arizona, she probably forgot the time change. Hello? Oh, yes. Oh, Mrs. Waller, I just can't tell you how awful I felt about it.
Hey, don't talk forever now.
Yes,
I'm trying to sleep.
Hmm? Well, that's very nice of you, Mrs. Waller, and I really did look after him. Well, thank you. Yes, we did, and it was lovely. It really... No. Oh, really? Did he? Oh, wonderful. Oh, that's wonderful, Mrs. Waldron.
What's so wonderful?
Oh, yeah. Just to say Mrs. Waldron's son-in-law felt so badly about the canary that he's giving her one of his new puppies to bring home.
Mark my words.
That's so nice.
Just mark my words. You'll get that dog to look after, too.
I will. I'll write you a letter and tell you all about it. Under the lilac bush. Yes. Well, tell me what kind of a dog is your new puppy, Mrs. Waldron.
I'll tell you what it is. With my luck, I'll bet it's a St. Bernard.
Oh, a St. Bernard, Mrs. Waldron. Oh, they're just darling.
I knew it. I'm getting psychic. Somehow I just know these...
The Little Things in Life has been brought to you by Final Net, the non-aerosol hair mist that holds up longer than you do. This program comes to you from the Radio Playhouse.
Yeah, do any of us remember having to do a kind of a coffin and a funeral service for, well, everything from a dog to a turtle? I don't think we did goldfish too much. And I think our budget ended up in the freezer for a while before we could find a place to dispose of it. Anyway, that's it for me for this time. I hope you enjoyed it, and probably we'll see you in a few weeks at the marathon. Hope you'll be there, too. We've got, of course, the usual half-dozen great hosts, and they'll have a batch of great shows. Can't tell you what's coming on yet, because you know what? I don't think it's fully decided, but you know it's going to be good. I'll be looking for you. In the meantime, as usual, it's good night, good listening, good luck, and goodbye.
I love to listen to my radio. See how it thrills me when I hear it go. Someday you'll hear it.